As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Good morning to you, Calvin. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well, Earl. It's finally Friday.
Yeah, man. I must not be doing too well, man, because I didn't realize yesterday we had – it was yesterday that we had Leroy Butler. How could I
– it's not today.
No. Man, I thought it was 2 days ago, man. Ah. And that voice you ought to know by now.
It's not Leroy. It's not Leroy Butler's voice.
It's Sandy Williams. Hey, good morning to you, Sandy. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. Yeah, yesterday. Yesterday was yesterday. That was Thursday.
I don't even believe that.
You're in a time warp.
Well, and because Leroy was such a good guest, and so many people listen in, and that I would forget that. But anyway, I did, because I knew I had bigger fish to fry today with Sandy coming in.
Yeah, right. You should have seen. I've got a photo of me doing the Lambo leap. I don't make it all the way up.
Anyway, man, it's good to see you.
Yeah, it's good to be here.
Yeah, yeah. You look well rested, man.
I'm faking it.
Yeah. Hey, I had a long night myself as I continued to recover from, you know, whatever it was I had. I was at the Big Bang last night, and it turned out to be a little bang.
Was it not so much?
Not so much. It looks like they're conserving things. That's not the way the Big Bang used to be that I used to see. Much smaller fireworks.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the big thing, they're saving up for the 4th, which is just around the corner. Sandy, the 4th of July is around the corner.
I know. But time is flying.
Yeah.
Life flies by.
You know, when you're young, I was talking with some children yesterday, about 250 children I was talking to yesterday. And I was telling them, you know, about how fast things are moving, right? And things are moving fast, Sandy, because, you know, the shorter our time becomes, the more we're aware of the time, right?
Well, you know, I think what happens, this is sort of the Einstein relativity thing. When you're 2 years old, a day is a fairly high percentage. One day is a fairly high percentage of all your days, okay?
Okay.
And so you're comparing the length of how long you've been around to this next day. You know, when you were 8 years old, the time from Thanksgiving to Christmas was
forever, right?
Forever. Now, it's a short 4 weeks that fly by, because it's each day is a smaller percentage of what you've experienced, you know? And so when you get to be our age, it's just a little bit.
Yeah.
And so the days fly.
Yeah, they really do fly. And so you recognize, I thought June just got here. June is in the ethers, right?
Well, of course, June fooled us by acting somewhat like.
Yeah, that's why.
Acted like April.
that's probably why, right? That we missed June.
We did miss June.
Yeah.
June missed us.
Yeah, man, June missed us. But anyway, Sandy, we got a lot of different things to talk about, and I'm sure this was high on the list of things in your preparation for the show. Lauren Boebert and Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Yeah, I think they're going to be, next episode is going to be a World Wrestling Federation episode with the two of them going at it in the cage.
She called her
cage.
A B.
Yeah, she used the B word.
In the Congress.
In Congress, yeah.
I mean,
they were getting gaveled by the Republican leader. You know, it was like, ladies, you know.
Congresswomen.
Yeah, please, people, please. Yeah. civility. Let's bring civility back. They were told to go outside and have their discussion. It was sort of like, take your fight outside.
I know. I mean, they really are a horrible example of women.
Well, the women. We shouldn't say women. Title IX and everything like that. They're just a horrible example of how people, of decorum and how people ought to behave. You know, they were fighting over the fact that supposedly Boebert had stolen the text of an impeachment resolution from Marjorie. And so she was kind of, stealing her thunder that was terrible. But, you know, you'd think that if you were actually trying to accomplish something in Congress, you'd be pleased that people were copying the language of your bill in their bill, because that would mean, I got another vote.
Hey, Sandy, you just said something that made me just almost my heart skip a beat. One was stealing the other's thunder?
Yeah.
You mean Marjorie Taylor Greene has thunder?
Yeah. Well, I'm sure she thinks she does.
The fact that they have to sit there and just listen to that, right? Because you know that goes on, maybe not to that degree. These two women are just, they're going to battle. And eventually they may come to blows because that's not going to change, right?
To be honest with you, I think some of this stuff is like what's going on in athletics now, where people pretend to be, arch enemies for the purpose of getting followers and stoking up a big following, right. And they don't really feel that way. It's, you know, Brooke Koepke in golf, there was the same kind of thing going on. I think these two, this gets them a lot of attention. And who knows?
That they may be fabricating it?
I think that the level of heat that they show in public is fabricated. I think it's done for
attention?
Yeah, it's done. It's theater. And that's what's the problem with America.
Are they that smart?
We've introduced theater into everything.
I know, but are they that smart?
Well, Marjorie Taylor Greene's conduct is clearly aimed at emulating Donald Trump's way of stealing the spotlight, which is to be outrageous. She's outrageous. So is Lauren Boebert. Both of them.
Yeah.
They can't be outrageous enough.
Hey, Sandy.
Yeah.
We're talking about Lauren Boebert and Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Yeah. Oh, how can we get? Yeah. See what I mean? It worked.
Yeah, I know. I brought it up.
We know her middle name.
Yeah.
Marjorie
Taylor Greene.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Anyway, man. Anyway, I wanted to talk about. I bet you Calvin has heard of this. Right. Watch this. Hey, Calvin.
Yes, Earl.
Have you been aware of this constant debate and argument for quite a while now? I don't know, 4, 5, 6 months, about tipping in restaurants?
Yes, I've been keeping up with that debate.
So Sandy has not been kind of aware.
Well, I knew that people were writing about it. I didn't realize that it had reached the level of like political discussion.
Oh.
With conservatives on one side and liberals on the other with respect to tipping?
Well, I don't know if it's both. It's not that it's Democrats or Republicans.
No, it's everybody.
This is everybody.
Yeah.
Who's constantly having conversation and dialogue. Well, why are they forcing us to tip? Nobody forces you to tip, right? You know, every time, you know, I go to a restaurant, I've already determined what I'm going to tip, right? Because I'm not, you know, I'm not Calvin. I don't have it like that. I'm not going to give a 30%.
But it is true, just to demonstrate that I can. It is true that we are now tipping for more things than we used to tip.
No question.
Because when they turn that screen around, which happens everywhere you use your card now, I'm surprised when I go to Walgreens and check out that they don't actually turn the screen around there and give me an opportunity.
And I'm thinking, Sandy, that I think one of the things that the people may be complaining about is we're thinking the tip goes to the person.
Yeah, some places it doesn't. Isn't that amazing?
That's America, though.
I guess, although, you know.
So how can—
I do ask— Now, when it's an unusual place, I'll say, are you going to get this tip? And they tell, most of the times they say, yeah, we share it amongst this group. And I say, okay, and then I do it. But there are some places, I forget where I was, Taco Bell or someplace.
Wait a minute. Write that down.
No, God, I don't want to defame.
No.
I don't know if it's them.
Sandy Williams and Taco Bell? Man, that must be.
Yeah, I just do it for my probiotics.
Oh, okay. Hey, Sandy,
it's a probiotic adventure.
Sandy Williams and Taco Bell with the meat that's not real. Mm. But for the probiotic.
Anyway, someplace, I shouldn't use any name because I don't remember. I was at some place and they said, yeah, we don't get that. It just goes to the house.
Yeah, like, and that's the part of it, I guess, because I want the people to get it. Right.
Yeah,
I don't want to give it to the owners, and because you know they've already got their prices set where they're going to make money, and those people that are working for them, you know, they're not being so handsomely, you know, rewarded like I am for being such a great talk.
Well, you know, America's unique in this tipping thing. If you travel much, you find out that in most places in the world, tipping is not done very much. And in most places in the world, being a waiter, for instance, is a profession. And they get paid by the house. They get paid a living salary by the house. And they're very professional because they are the face of the restaurant to the customer. And so they just have a different view of the way things should operate. And, you know, tipping is a little bit of a way to fool yourself about the price of what it costs to go out to dinner, right? Because if you go out to dinner, you better add the 20% tip you're going to give. Hope you give 20%.
Listen, we've got to go to a break.
Oh.
That time flew.
That was meaty. We had a very meaty conversation.
2789. It's Friday. I mean, Friday's with my co-host, Sandy Williams. We'll be right back. We'll get you.
Radio show.
Gary from Sussex. Hey, Gary.
Whose birthday is it? Is it both you guys' birthday or is it Mike's?
It's my birthday today. Mike's was 2 days ago.
I'm going to sing a happy birthday, and I'm going to sing it the right way. Happy birthday to you, Mr. President of his radio station and his sidekick.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Weekday afternoons from 4 until 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Looking for more local programming? Check out our website, civicmedia.us, to see our entire lineup.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Sunshine mixed with clouds at times today, with a high of 86. Winds out of the northeast, 5 to 10 miles an hour. Tonight, lows dip down to about 60. Mainly clear again tomorrow. High temperatures reach up to 89.
Someone singing about that we'll find one another.
There's such a phenomenon. The voices, these two voices.
Yeah.
Welcome back to the Early Room Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Fridays with Sandy Williams. Sandy, we're going to get right at Ukraine and this offensive that everybody was waiting on and all the conversations. You know, maybe this was 6 months in the making, and this great offensive was going to come, and people thought that, okay, with the great offensive, we're going to see this major change and major transformation. And, you know, I guess, Sandy, it's easy for people to assume, who don't know war, that you can move, you know, things that quickly. There's no way that we could have even possibly, in common sense, that whatever it was they had, that they were going to somehow.
Well, no, and I, if you got dug in trench warfare, I mean, the warfare that's going on right now is much more like World War One than it is like World War Two. So you've got entrenched warfare. If you see the outlines of the long front they have, the Russians have three levels of trenches, you know, three levels of defense that you have to get through to make an advance. And they've got anti-tank stuff all laid out. I mean, it's all set up to make movement very difficult. And now they're talking about the fact that the Russians seem to have some air superiority, surprise. You know, that was expected on day one that they would have air superiority. They're beginning to flex that muscle more effectively, apparently. The thing that is, I think, telling is that we've got people in the United States and around the world basically saying, you know, this offensive better work, because if it doesn't, you know, people are going to back off from supporting Ukraine, which tells me that they didn't have the strategic interest in this war to start with. Because if you had a strategic interest in Ukraine, you would be increasing your level of support if Ukraine was being unsuccessful instead of decreasing it. But this tells me that this is sort of a fair-weather friend thing. We were willing to be dog in the manger with Russia so long as we could do it from a distance and safely. But, you know, this is the part of this real politic I've talked about, the Henry Kissinger version of politics, in which you assess the realities of the hegemony of various nations and you respect it, and you don't flex your muscle in someone else's backyard unless it's of strategic value to you.
So Vladimir Zelensky is trying to get clearly the allies and everybody to, hey, don't be frustrated. Because everything that you were reading was, hey, we're loading up, we're ready to go, and we're going to push, and they've made their initial push, and they haven't gotten anywhere.
Well, we don't, you know, they've gotten somewhere, apparently, yeah. But this is the problem with a war without war correspondence, is we can get the news from Russia, and it's slanted. We can get the news from Ukraine, and it's equally slanted the other way, and we don't know. Literally, we don't know, based on the news we're receiving, exactly what's happening. Who's winning? Who's losing? You know, you can't tell the teams without a scorecard. Well, you can't tell the score in this game.
So retired General Ben Hodges told Newsweek that concerns around Ukraine's slow progress and reported high casualties in the opening phase of the operation should be tempered by military realities and not shaped by what people wanted or believed would happen, which is what you've been saying all along.
Right. I mean, militarily, this is going to be a horrible situation, because it's a front war that involves the killing of lots of people on both sides, regardless of which direction things are moving. And movement comes very slowly. We saw that with Bakhmut. We had 5 months of fighting in a place called Bakhmut, which is no bigger than Waukesha, Wisconsin.
So Sandy, let me, an 800-mile front.
Right.
800 miles. that this front is. I can't envision what 800 miles looks like, but to think that there's military fronts drawn over 800 miles.
Well, let's just say that it gets you almost to Denver from here.
Wow, man. Listen, we've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. An 800-mile front. We'll be right back. So, Sandy.
And even though I know how very far apart we are, it helps to think we might be with
you. Use. Can you afford to go down the wrong path? Design Garden uses modern tools to build your website the right way. Find us on.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. It means Fridays with Sandy Williams. And I got to make an announcement. Civic Media and WAUK, Johnny, Civic Media. Calm down. Take a deep breath.
Yeah.
Civic Media and
Enunciate.
Enunciate.
Yes.
It's hard to enunciate when your sinuses drain. maybe that's more information that we should be giving out.
That was TMI.
Civic Media and WAUK's own Johnny Watermelon will be at Friday Night Live tonight in Waukesha, 6:30 to 9 p.m. Johnny will also be at the Waukesha Farmers Market, 8 a.m. to noon this Saturday. By all means, get out and meet, if you haven't already met, the one and only Johnny Watermelon. There's got to only be one.
Yeah.
Would you?
I would agree.
Right. All right. What was I going to talk about, man? I had something.
Well,
I've forgotten that quick.
Oh, I don't know. I think we were chatting about the Theater of Washington.
Oh yeah, what about the Theater of Washington?
Well, I think the Boebert Taylor thing. My view is that all of this and also the Hunter Biden.
Oh, the Hunter Biden.
So the Hunter Biden situation and all the theatrics about that posturing. And so I guess my view is that the question you asked off the air is this what we've come to? Is Washington just theater? My answer is yes, it appears to be. I think World Wrestling Enterprises, WWE, has moved into Washington, into the Capitol, and is staging every day, the good guys, the bad guys, the stock characters, the hyperbole, the fake fights, the food fights, the whole thing is an exaggeration. It's like stock characters. It's like Hollywood. It's like slapstick.
Sandy, I always remember our conversations from years ago. And I remember a few years back when you were talking about third party.
Yeah.
And you're talking about, Canada and other places where they have,
Multiple parties
and the importance of that. Are these parties endangering themselves that now people have had enough of the slapstick, which really is creating the problems, that we are dealing with in this country that appear to be insurmountable?
I'm confident of it. I'm confident that if this notion of having a centrist party has got lots of traction. Lots of people on both sides of the aisle who view themselves as being near the center. I think those are people who are trying to get back to the old-time civility. Then we've got people on each end who are feeling that, Bernie Sanders progressives feel like things aren't moving enough in the direction that and the conversation isn't real enough. And I'm one of those people. I think our conversation about the problems that America faces and the things we need to do have not been real enough. And we haven't been able to move away from the control of K Street and money and politics to talk about, like I did on Monday when we talked about the problem of the broken healthcare system. That's just one of the things and one of the ways in which the American market mechanism is failing the people. We've got, you know, the failure of our country to match the kind of social safety net that the rest of the world has is going to disable our version of capitalism, and our version of capitalism is going to fail if we don't, as a government, begin to deal with the problems that are at its fringe.
So you know, Sandy, when Bernie Sanders and John Nichols, you know, United States Senator and a well-written guy in John Nichols, come together and create a book, and the book talks about bought and paid for politicians. You would think that would be that verbiage, bought and paid for politician, would be something Bernie Sanders would run away from, right? I mean, you wouldn't think that the person who's in that line of conversation, Sandy, would be, you know, willing to have that dialogue in a book, because you would think that there would be some pushback on from his colleagues.
Well, you know, I think number one, Bernie's been willing to be a less than totally popular with his fellow senators kind of a guy because of the fact that he's a truthsayer about this kind of stuff, and you know, I just think that. That multiple parties is going to be one of the only answers to too much money in politics that's neutralized us to the point where Washington won't take on the issues that the moneyed interests care about, you know, the K Street cares about. So K Street cares about health insurance. K Street and money in politics cares about health care providers and making their path very soft. It's the reason why America spends 50% more than the next most expensive country per capita on health care. You know, that same stuff is the reason why we've got no attention being paid to child daycare, why we've got public education under attack by the people who are lobbying on behalf of charter school and voucher school and private schools. You know, we just... You know, Tom from L.A. talks about getting money out of politics, and we need to, but it'll require either the Supreme Court to reverse itself or a constitutional amendment. And absent that, I think multiple parties is going to be the only way to attack this.
You know, Sandy, right here in the state of Wisconsin, we can talk about the politics nationally, and they always say all politics are local, but in Wisconsin and what's going on right now, these politics that Republicans are dealing with and really are hurtful. And it's like they're looking to hurt people and you know, and no reason other than that. And somehow all states are different, right? I mean, what states need are different. Whatever's going on in the state of Wisconsin, clearly what we need in Wisconsin is different than what's going on in Las Vegas, in Nevada. But there are segments of it that we all need, like you say, daycare and those kind of things. But yet we have the Republicans now saying we are going to cut back on daycare spending.
Eliminating the daycare. From, I mean, $300 million program for Wisconsin that they're going to eliminate.
So explain how that makes sense.
Well, you know, what doesn't make sense is we have a shortage of workers. Daycare is all about freeing up a person who otherwise is going to have to stay home and tend to their children. Because in today's world, almost every couple has two breadwinners, okay? But you can't have two breadwinners if you have children and you don't have daycare. So what Europe and the rest of the developed world has figured out is that daycare is a good thing. It's a good thing for the country. It's a good thing for the children to be well taken care of and to get preschool education. And it's good for the labor force because it frees up workers to participate in the labor
force. But when it's painted as a freeloading kind of thing, well, you know, you shouldn't have had the children if you couldn't afford to pay for the daycare. But they don't realize that the cost of daycare has soared.
And they've made abortion illegal. So they've made the numbers of children to be born further beyond the notion of it of choice, right, in terms of people being able to choose whether they have children or not. And the whole thing is very, very perverse. And the conservatives want to point at cities and declare them to be failures based on the problems within cities, and then all the steps they take are aimed
to make it
more difficult for the cities to deal with the problems they face. Daycare, that's really something that can help everybody, but it also could have a big impact in an urban center. The notion of the locality being able to choose how they deploy their policemen. No, now we've decided that at the state level that there have to be these resource officers employed in schools, whether or not that's going to be beneficial to the schools or not. Because the dilettantes, these people who pretend they know what they're doing but don't have any professional training in any of the things necessary to decide whether this is a good idea or not.
So Sandy, we have a fire and police commission in the city of Milwaukee that has been around for, almost since the longest standing fire and police commission in the entire nation.
Well, it was part of the progressive movement in Wisconsin, the La Follette progressive movement, the movement that made Wisconsin the model for good government in the country. And one of those models was to have a fire and police commission oversight over police departments so that the community, the people who are the police,
could
have input into the police who are there for the purpose of being beneficial to the community.
Which many other states have copied.
Exactly.
Because they say, hey, that makes sense. But here we have people, again, Republicans, who've decided, and the one in Milwaukee was starting to work. They put some really lucid people on it, Sandy, and it was really starting to render with a young chief now who's willing to listen to those things, not a chief like Breyer from decades ago, but a young guy who says, I think the community has some input and should have some input in how we do business. And then he bought into that. But now you take that away, and the chief didn't say, I know the chief personally, I know he didn't say, hey, I want to be the guy who makes the decisions on what happens to my officers. I know he didn't want that. But the people in Madison have made that decision. And this is going to be a cluster, you know what. Because the police, in many instances, they don't want to have to.
Well, I don't think the police understand. The police union must have played a significant role in having this done, because they're the only entity that has the political force to have something suddenly happen out of the blue like this. But, I don't think the police force and union are smart enough to understand that, to some extent, that commission protects them, because it is a pathway for input from the community that is sort of indirect in a way and allows people to vent to the commission and to feel like they have input. Without the commission, or without an effective commission, what are they left with? They're left with a process.
Could be heavy-handedness.
Yeah, it could be real strident reactions to the police themselves directly. I mean, this is stupid, and it's stupidity from afar, and it's the kind of ideological politics. It's like, they're doing it. Why are they doing it? Because they can. That's the answer. Why are we doing it? Because we can.
Yeah, you know, Sandy, again, that whole thing with the daycare, is going to come back to haunt them in more ways than they can ever imagine. Didn't have to do it. It wasn't bothering anybody, right? $300,000 on the state budget.
Wait, is it $300,000?
No, $300 million.
Million. It was a big number. It was a sizable program that was eliminated, and it was a program that could have made a significant difference. I mean, it's a program that
we could have afforded.
It's even more important and a better investment than the high-speed train that we foolishly turned down for foolish reasons.
Gotta go to a break. Tom, hang on. We'll get you on the other side.
Much cooler Sunday.
Thinking back in time when love was only in my mind, I realize ain't no second chance. You got to hold on to romance. Don't let it slide. There's a special kind of magic in the air when you find another heart that needs to share. Baby, come to me. Let me put my arms around you.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, a cool Friday on the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's with Sandy Williams. Let's go to the phone lines. Let's get Dave from Mequon. Hey, Dave, how you doing? Thank you very much for the call, man. You say what?
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. Really quickly, I will just say this with the Fire and Police Commission. I also remember, Earl, when you had a different opinion about them, especially with the debacle of, you know, flipping around with the police chiefs, and there was some nepotism going on, and you had some corruption going on in the Fire Police Commission itself. And the only reason why Jeffrey Norman is the police chief is that really it kind of just felt by default. Nobody else really, they were supposed to do a nationwide search. And they just settled on him because of the debacle with Chief Morales that was going on, you know, prior to that. So, you know, we could talk up the, you know, Fire and Police Commission like they were great. No, there was a lot of broken parts. And it just so happened that, you know, Jeffrey Norman, okay, we'll just put him as police chief. And,
I have to correct you before you go any further. The Fire and Police Commission was certainly under then Mayor Tom Barrett and some of the people who he had appointed to the Fire and Police Commission for many years was not acceptable to many people in the city of Milwaukee, especially people of color, because of the way police were being protected. So that's why the major changes that came to the Fire and Police Commission was because of many of the horrific things that happened with police officers and police relationships with people in the city. Do you remember, David, where many of the police officers were sodomizing many of the people who they stopped. Do you remember that, David? And it went to court, and the city had to settle out of court because of that. That wasn't so long ago, David.
I understand that.
Okay, my point is the police department and the Fire and Police Commission was the good old boys' place for a long time. And citizens from the city of Milwaukee revolted and forced the change of the Fire and Police Commission. Do you remember when they only had maybe four or five people on a commission that could seat somewhere around 9 to 11? And Tom Barrett, then mayor, refused to even put more and more people on it so it can be representative of what it was supposed to, David. Those were the things that were going on with the Fire and Police Commission before they finally brought in the right people, completely overhauled the Fire and Police Commission, and for the first time, the Fire and Police Commission was working the way it was set up to be,
well,
a citizen review board.
Well, and also, you know, this the good government model of Wisconsin had things like the DNR board set up to insulate entities that were going to be enforcing laws from the political whims of the four-year or then two-year election cycles of governor so that there would be stability. So the Public Service Commission, you know, had staggered terms. An agency like the DNR was subject to the DNR board that ran and selected the DNR secretary rather than the governor. And the same was true. That was the notion behind the police commissions as well, to insulate the police department from the direct political patronage issues associated with being subject directly to the mayor and the mayor's office. And so, you know, in principle, it has a lot of soundness. Now, in operation, sure, these things can get warped, and they can get warped by the very political process that they're designed to protect against because the appointments are obviously political. But you have to decide where's the devil? The devil's in the details, and where do you want to come down with respect to allowing politics to play a direct role in something like, for instance, policing? At the federal level, you know, we obviously have a problem with the notion and the worry that politics would play a role in, for instance, the FBI or the CIA or the various law enforcement or agencies like that. So that's the thinking, I think, David, behind it. I think you're right that the police commission hasn't always operated smoothly, but I'm not sure that the better outcome is to remove it.
Well, what they've also done was added two seats have to now be former police officers, which is ridiculous. If it's an oversight board of the police department, why would the state demand that two of those seats have to be made up of former police officers, Dave? How does that make sense?
Well,
they're had interactions with, you know, the people on a daily basis, and they probably still have connections within the police department itself where they get to hear. I mean, I know personally, on a personal level, working downtown, how short staff the police department is, and there's a lot of burnout right now. And I think a lot of people don't realize the amount of shifts that some of these officers have to cover. It's very stressful, and so I do think it's important that you do have that little piece of the pie included because, again,
that's not a little piece of the pie.
All goes on,
David. That's not a little piece of the pie.
Okay, when you have two people, though they were former officers, I don't think that that's a bad thing because they still will have interaction with the current officers. And they can give you an update of how the department really is. Like,
yeah, this is a civilian oversight board.
Well,
civilian.
Well, you know, in terms of the detail of whether it's a good idea or not to have two ex-police officers on it, my problem with it is that the state and the state legislature is not the entity to decide how it is that the Milwaukee Police Department or the Mequon Police Department or whatever police department ought to run itself. You know, I think that's a matter of local politics, but I think we've got a break.
David, thank you. Tom, we'll come to you on the other side. It's Friday, so my co-host Sandy Wade will be right back.